Hello, everybody. James here, episode 38 of Storytime with Dutch Mantel. And we're really disappointed because we had StreamYard ready to go and then it didn't bloody work. Ah, man. Technology, Dutch. Technology. Yes.
Well, hey, I know less than you do. And I was following directions from you. But none of it worked for about, I don't know, 15 minutes. So we're running late today. What are we going to talk about first?
Well, we're going to do some plugs first. In fact,
where do you want to go today? You want to go from Tampa to Miami, get in the car, or you want to go to Tampa to Jacksonville?
I wouldn't mind going to Clearwater.
Well, that's a short trip, though.
Oh, is it? How long's the trip from Tampa to Clearwater?
Yeah, about 30 minutes, 20 minutes.
Can we do a loop?
It's very close. Just let's head toward Miami. We're lost. And then we'll hit Alligator Alley, and then we'll turn around and we'll come back.
Yeah, we'll just drive around in circles. Let's do the books first very quickly. The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, The People's Champion. I've written that book. King of Pranks, Owen Hart. I've written that book, both available on Amazon. Dutch has got two books as well. Tales from a Dirt Road, available on Amazon. A Quarter World According to Dutch, available from Amazon. If you want them signed, go to Dirty Dutch Mantel with two L's at gmail.com. We have a t-shirt out finally. So in the links of this description, you can click on that and find the... I've already forgot what the t-shirt slogan is. You people mean nothing to me. T-shirt slogan. And we will eventually have more. But that's causing problems as well. And give us 5 stars on iTunes if you like it. And before we get into the meat of millions of news stories that have happened over the last couple of weeks, Dutch, you are making a rare appearance in Kissimmee, Florida on February 16th. What are you doing there?
Well, it is a rare appearance because I stay close to home these days. But it's a seminar for up-and-coming, young, future wrestlers. And it's in Kissimmee, Florida. It's on February the 16th. Starts at 8 p.m. And the address is 2860 Michigan Avenue, Kissimmee, Florida. And if you want to attend, you can send me an email at dirtydutchmantel2ls@gmail.com, or you can call this number 407-470-3095. 407-470-3095. And they'll have all the information for you there. And it's a 2-hour seminar that I wish somebody had given me before I kind of got into the business, because I knew nothing to expect. I didn't know anything. I mean, I got in it blind as a bat. And of course, a lot of people nowadays know more about it, but yet they are still some ins and outs that you need to know that you won't learn watching Raw or SmackDown. So if you learn those things early, and I think it would help anybody who is considering a future in professional wrestling. And then, of course, I watch the guys work out. But basically, this is an information seminar. And then we're going to, of course, have them work out. And I'll judge them there. Because I would rather somebody tell me up front, kid, you got a chance. Our kid, you don't have a chance in hell. So, and people don't want to hear that, but I think it'd save them a lot of money. It really would. And I'll be truthful with that. That is Thursday, February the 16th in Kissimmee, Florida. And I hope to see everybody there.
So it's sort of like an American Idol sort of judging table. And you're going to look at people work out and give them the thumbs up or no. But ultimately, you're there to impart some serious wisdom.
Knowledge. And they can ask, we have a question and answer session. So any questions they have, I'll be right there to answer. Because sometimes you want a question answered and you email somebody and they might get back to you or they might not. But face-to-face with someone, you know, it's easy to give an answer. That's what I like about them. I give very few of these. Probably the last one I gave was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But But I enjoy doing them because I think a lot of these guys, their questions are from the heart, and they want to know, and I'll answer truthfully whatever question they ask.
We are going to get into the meat of the podcast now, and I thought we're going to do a nice tribute to Lanny Poffo. Had quite a few questions. You saw the script. It was like Gone with the Wind. The amount of pages I sent you, but so much news has also happened that we're just going to have to get straight into it. And the main news that broke yesterday, that you had a part in it as well, because you were disseminating the latest news on Twitter, was that Jerry the King Lawler suffers a stroke. On February 7th, Jerry the King Lawler suffers a stroke, and LA Times writes, WWE Hall of Famer Jerry the King Lawler, 73, was found face down outside his home after suffering a stroke in Fort Myers, Florida on Tuesday. Longtime friend Dutch Mantel tweeted that Lawler experienced paralysis on his right side immediately following the stroke. Lawler has been a pro wrestler for more than 50 years and had a match last month. So, I think we were just talking off air. That's not quite right as well. But do you want to talk us through what you heard at the beginning and how you came to know this?
Well, ironically, I like that word, ironically, just before we started this podcast, I was talking to Kevin Lawler, who just called me. I mean, I texted him last night and I asked him, how was your dad? Because I've known this kid since he's like 8 years old. So he called me back right before I started talking to you. And I asked him, I said, how's your dad? And he gave me the lowdown. He says, today he is better. He is improving. He can... And the paralysis, did I say right side or left side?
On this, it says paralysis on his right side.
Right side, that's correct. He was paralyzed on his right side, his arm and his leg. And, of course, it was numb, and he couldn't speak. But today, the movement is coming back. He has more movement, and he's still having trouble speaking. But the doctor says that's normal because that is one of the last things that comes back, is speech. And he was talking to his son, but he said you could tell that he was frustrated because his brain is back working now. That's what a stroke is. His brain is back working, and he knows what he wants to say, yet he can't quite get the words out. But the doctor says he's much improved from when they first brought him in. Again, ironically, I've often said this about Lawler. He's the luckiest SOB I've ever seen in my life, and tough. He got to be tough. This is he had a heart attack in 2012 live on Raw. I watched it, and it's funny sometimes when you watch that, you're thinking again, is this a setup? Is this a skit? Is this an angle? Because I knew it wasn't. But a lot of fans told me they thought that they were building to something. Somebody had went out there and done something to him. And the same way with the Owen Hart, when he fell out of the ceiling, they thought that was set up, but it wasn't. But anyway, he had a heart attack in 2012. He had a stroke in 2018. And he just happened to get to the hospital in time there. And this time, what had happened, he was in Fort Myers, Florida, and he was waiting for his girlfriend to get down there. I think her name is Lauren, but she wasn't down there yet. And he had a little moped scooter, I guess, and he got on it and went down to the store on the corner or some shop, and he was going to buy something. I forgot what it was. But when he walked in, and Kevin, I guess, talked to these people, he went down there yesterday from Memphis. He talked to the people who know Jerry, and he said he was a little bit unsteady on his feet, a little bit wobbly. And the owner's daughter is, what do you think? A nurse who works at a hospital that specializes in strokes. And she saw him and called 911, ambulance come to pick him up. And he wasn't found in his driveway face down. He actually went to the hospital from the little shop that he went to. Now, Jim Ross talked to him early in the week, said he was talking a little bit, but much improved. So, and the thing in my connection with Lawler, of course, is we have the same birthday, the same day, the same year, probably about 3 hours apart. And I've known him basically all my professional life. I've known Jerry Lawler. And so we've always had this little connection that we had the same birthday. And that bothered me a lot when he went down, because, you know, we call each other Cosmic Brothers because of the birthday. But I hope he's fine. I hope he's good. And Kevin says when he go, he's not at the hospital yet. He's still at his dad's condo. He said when he goes to the hospital, he will mention that he talked to me, to his dad. And he said if his dad is up to it, they'll give me a call. And I can talk to him directly and see how he's doing.
I have a couple of things to add. One, this LA Times thing says right-hand side, and your tweet said left-hand side. I'm going to presume that the LA Times completely messed up, and I've already given myself some editing to do as soon as we're done with this show, but I'll sort that out. So you tweeted the left-hand side, and I believe that's the correct side. Did the doctors or did Kevin tell you anything about when he can expect to leave the hospital, or is it just a case-by-case basis?
Well, we didn't get that far. One reason I would have talked to him longer, except I had to do this podcast. You know, I push a lot of things off to do this podcast, James. Mm. I mean, it's just my whole deal. No, but I'll call him back later. And if I have any more information, I'll put it on my Twitter. But it really caught me out of the blue that as would a close friend or a member of your family, if it happened to them, of course, you don't expect it. But Jerry Lawler is one lucky guy. And I've always said he's the luckiest son of a gun in the world. Had a stroke, standing in a shop or starting to have a stroke. I don't really understand strokes, but it's in the brain. And people who work with it, like this nurse, she can look at you and tell you if you're having it or not. So how many people have strokes and heart attacks when medical personnel are right in front of them? Very few.
I just to confirm is that a stroke is a serious life-threatening medical condition that happens when the blood supply to parts of the brain is cut off. Just in case anyone didn't know, and I couldn't really quite define one either, actually.
What is the carotid? How do you say that word?
Carotid artery.
Carotid has something to do with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way above my pay grade, so I don't know.
I think Lawler's quite an incredible person in the sense that he never really did any like professional sports, but he was a really athletic professional wrestler. And similarly, I believe he never hit the gym. He never really exercised outside of doing professional wrestling, and he was a big fan of full sugar Coca-Colas. So he's never been the healthiest throughout the years, but yet he's been incredibly athletic his entire life.
Well, he never played football or basketball or any kind of a team sport that I know of. He did play softball. He loved softball. He had a team that he put together himself. And they entered this, it's not a semi-professional league around Memphis, but guys who are really, really good. So he played with them, and I think they did well, because you wouldn't catch him dead in a gym. Believe me, he wouldn't even drive past the gym. But he didn't have to, because he just had the knack of knowing what to do. And his big contribution was to the to pro wrestling was not only his style, Iron, but he was creative. And it got him this far, 53 years in the wrestling business. I think he started wrestling before I did, a year or two. I started in 72. I think he started in 70. Had to if he went 53 years. And he tells a story of how he got in, some independent. He would go, he was from Memphis, and the regular company that ran Memphis wouldn't even talk to him. And then he went over there and got some experience in some little independent shows, as Jim Cornette calls it, some mud show over in Arkansas. And he got a little experience, and then he came back. And then Jerry Jarrett, who was the promoter, or who was the booker for Memphis, liked him and started pushing him, and he got over. And all this time, he started calling himself the king. And ironically, here's that, there's that word again. Ironically, he started calling himself the king the Saturday after Elvis Presley died. He came on TV and says, well, the king is dead, but the new king has arrived. And he appointed himself, and a lot of people in Memphis, they wanted to kill him. That's part of his heat. He was a heel anyway. I mean, to make a joke out of Elvis's death in Memphis on live TV, they had some death threats against him, I think. People have called up the station, said they were going to kill him. And I think they had to call some police down there before the show was over, because when he left, you know, nobody came, but he did get some threats. But that's pretty ballsy, I would think. The king of rock and roll dies, and all of a sudden you go out on live TV, and it had a massive, massive rating. Memphis TV, it had a wrestling on Memphis TV, had a primetime rating on at 11 o'clock in the morning. People have told me that they used to set their watch by the wrestling show, because when it come on, hey, it's 11 o'clock, and they didn't miss a Saturday. Very, very highly watched show. And at Lawler, he's as synonymous with Memphis now as, I will say this, as Elvis. And I forgot that lady actor, but
Sybil Shepherd.
She's from Memphis. But when you think Sybil Shepherd, you don't think Memphis. But when you think Lawler, you think Memphis. Beale Street, the barbecue place, or whatever he's got there. I've never been there. But and the thing about Memphis was, we were as over, all the wrestlers. If you were on Memphis TV, people knew you. We were as over as rock stars. And guess what? We were too dumb to know it. Everybody knew us. But see, Lawler and Jimmy Hart, they made it work for them. They're both from Memphis. So Lawler had all week to sell advertisements or get, you know, spokesman's job from car dealerships and furniture dealerships. And there's no telling how much money Lawler was making, not off wrestling, but in selling his image and likeness and doing somebody's interview on TV. So everybody knew him. That's the thing, he kind of kept quiet because he didn't want anybody else like busting in on his payday. And I don't blame him, but he was in wrestling. He was the king of Memphis.
And he sounds like he's been cheating death since at least 1977, and long may that continue.
Yeah, I think he possibly, I don't know how long he's in a hospital. When he had the heart attack in Canada, I don't know how long he was in the hospital, but he wasn't just in and out. I think he was there a week or so. And I think he may, by just hearing how he is right now, I think he's possibly a week in Florida too, if nothing else happens.
So next on the agenda, we've got superstar Billy Graham. His health woes are quite substantial at the moment. He's apparently lost 45 pounds in about 3 weeks. He's been hospital 3 weeks, and he's coded while in the ICU as well. A quote from the family say he is...
Okay, explain that to me. Coded, what's that mean?
You know, we go code blue, when they probably flatline and they need to get the nurses in to bring him back.
So you're watching for a flatline?
I believe that would be something akin to coding, yes.
Okay.
And
I didn't know that.
Do you never watch ER in the day?
No.
Oh, all right.
I don't watch that.
A quote from the family say he's dealing with a myriad of very serious health issues, a major infection in his ears and skull that may take 6 months of intravenous IVs, congestive heart failure, diabetes, hearing loss as a result of the infection, and the list goes on.
Wow.
So he's,
he has diabetes and what?
Infection in the ears and skull that will take 6 months to clear, congestive heart failure, hearing loss as a result of the infection. Did you work with Superstar in Florida at all?
I was with him in Florida. I made a few trips with him. I didn't really know him that well. He treated me fine. I mean, he was a good guy. I rode with him one night, and Ivan Koloff, and they were talking about going back to New York. See, we didn't call it the WWF in those days. They just called it New York. If you went to Texas, you go to Dallas or Georgia, Atlanta. They called the offices by the town or by the city that the office was situated in. Florida was Tampa. The Carolinas was Charlotte. But they kept talking about going back to New York and those two doing an angle together. And during the conversation, they got excited talking about it. Hell, I got excited just listening to it. I had nothing to do with it, but it was fun listening to those guys talk about it. Because what made WWF in those days, or New York, because they had those big cities. You had Madison Square Garden in New York City. You had the Boston Garden in Boston, and then Philadelphia. Those are big towns. Pittsburgh, those huge big towns. Baltimore, Washington, D.C. They could run those towns, and it would make, I mean, their buildings made what they had in Memphis like it'd be second grade. Because Memphis Coliseum seated 11,000. Madison Square Garden seats 20. Boston Garden seated probably 18. So they had these big arenas. So if you did go in there and you did sell it out, you could make some big, big money. And that's what they were excited to do. They was going to call up Vince Sr. in those days and pitch it to him. And I don't know if they did or, but I don't think they went up there and did that angle though. But the way they were talking about it, it would have been hell. I'd have went to see it just by listening to them.
What year was this? Was this like late 70s or early 80s?
I would say I was in Florida in 75, 76. Damn, I'm old. Damn. Anyway, but that's what I remember. It is a miracle that I'm even remembering the year. I mean, you can only go back so far. You know, I have a theory about Alzheimer's, you know, because I think about that sometimes. But I think that, and you may agree with this, if you have a computer and you put a bunch of information in it, eventually the hard drive gets full. Correct? Mm-hmm. Your brain has a memory. You can only remember so much stuff. And then that's why you can remember things 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago. And you can't remember last week. My theory is the brain's full. It can't accept any more information. It makes sense? Mm-hmm. It does make sense. I mean, that's probably not. A doctor would look at me and say, you idiot, get out of here.
We will move on. Hulk Hogan's health battles recently. Kurt Angle recently said on his podcast, he can't feel his lower body. He has to use a cane to walk around.
Who is this?
Kurt Angle on Hulk Hogan.
I see.
I thought he was using his cane because he had pain in his back. He doesn't have any pain. He has nothing at all. He can't feel anything. He can't feel his legs, so he has to walk with a cane. So that's pretty serious. Now, that strikes me as a bit odd. If you can't feel your legs, I'm pretty sure that you couldn't walk even with a cane. But Hulk Hogan's representative then responded via Entertainment Tonight. At 69 years old, Hulk Hogan is doing well and is not paralyzed. The rep further stated everything is okay with him. Hulk is someone with a lot of humor. He was just pretending that he couldn't walk.
Well, he's about that age, and I have some of it now too. It's called neuropathy. And it's when it's a nerve condition. And it's one of those conditions that they really don't quite understand, I don't think. But you can walk, but not that well, and you need a cane. That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, that's a drugstore. I got my drugstore diagnosis, but that's what I would say. And it isn't, he's not paralyzed. You can still move around, but not as well as you could before.
I'm presuming that Hulk Hogan made some appearances in WWE during your Zeb Colter run in 2013-2014 time. What was his mobility and health like at that point then?
It was seemed like the same to me. He was still mobile. He could move around. I mean, where was this where he got in the ring on a WrestleMania and forgot where he was?
Was that
20... New Orleans?
Yes, yes, yeah. Because he was Superdome or Silverdome, I think he got confused with.
I'm sitting in the back. I was on that show. I'm sitting in the back. You know, guys sit in the back and they go, oh, let's see what he's got to say. And I'm like this. I'm going, and the Superdome. And I went, what the hell? Of course, it didn't get by Rock and Stone Cold because they went in the ring and like roasted him. But and the people they loved that anyway. So he just forgot where he was. But see, I was around when Hulk was starting. When I was in Florida, I made a couple of trips with him. And he was as green as grass, still a big guy, you know. But he was a weightlifter, and because they liked in those days they liked big guys that had some size to them and some cut a little bit. Because he was steroided up to the gills. I didn't really get in on the steroid gimmick that much. Somebody asked me one time, do you ever take steroids? I says, I did, but nobody told me you had to work out with them too. I said, I just got fat. but he was a good guy, and I think when he left there, I think he went to Memphis, where he was Sterling
Golden.
He either went to Alabama or into Memphis as Sterling Golden. And then he went to Minnesota. And I don't know what he was there, but he became Hulk Hogan in WWF. I think that's when he became Hulk Hogan. And the rest of it's history.
You know, I just have to bring this up. With WrestleMania, I think it was WrestleMania 30 or wherever it was in New Orleans. And after the fact, he tried to make it seem like he had no idea that The Rock and Steve Austin were going to come out. It's like, everyone knows. Everyone knows that it was a setup. Why even pretend that it wasn't?
Hey, Hucks. He's a study unto himself. I don't think he even knows what he's going to do. I don't know him that well. I mean, that would be a Jimmy Hart question. You know, we need to get Jimmy Hart on here one day. I would love to have him.
I nearly had him on my other channel. And in fact, you know what? I'm not going to say it on the podcast, but remind me to tell you afterwards. Anyway, I couldn't have him on for a very odd reason, but I'll tell you afterwards. Next, sorry for teasing everybody. I'll tell you the Norway story someday. Samoa Joe.
Hey, keep all these stories. People say, "What are you going to tell us? When are you going to tell us?" And then we'll do a special show where we tell you all the secrets.
Absolutely. What was that? That's dog barking.
Well, I got a road. I can't see the road, but I'm sitting here looking out, and you know, trees, and there's like a little swamp there. I'm in Florida, and there's an alligator that I've named George or something in there. But right past that is a road. And I don't know why they do it there, but cars, they speed there. I mean, they go down to second gear and and it just echoes right into my into my den here.
Yeah, it's just you did a sort of like double take like that. I thought maybe someone had like jumped through the window. We're going to skip Samoa Joe. We can leave that till another day. Booker T has announced his retirement at the age of 57. Booker T, who appeared in the 2023 Royal Rumble match as the surprise entrant and lasted under 1 minute, has all but announced his retirement from professional wrestling. This is from his podcast. "It was a great exit for me. I don't think it could have been any better than that, but putting the old boots up, it's kind of hard. I think that's it. I really do. I think that was the last time putting on the boots and getting back in the ring from that level. I think that's the last time I really want to do it too. At that level, I don't think it can be better than that, seriously. But I want to thank all the fans for that moment." Booker T retiring.
Well, he needed a send-off. That's a good way to send him off. He has a school, I think, down in Dallas or somewhere in Texas, I think. And he's still in professional wrestling, except he's not actively performing anymore. He has a school, and I think he does shows in Texas, his own shows. But as far as actively performing in a ring, he's done. I don't blame him. There comes a point to where if somebody asked me to get in the ring, I said, "You got to be kidding me." I said, "You couldn't melt and pour me in a ring right now." Because I see guys, I watch SmackDown because I have a little deal with Sportskeeda every Friday night. I watch SmackDown and then I watch AEW at Rampage, and that's what I report on. Some of those bumps they take are ungodly, unbelievable. And if we had done that back in the day, well, first of all, we wouldn't have made it 2 years in the business because we would have killed ourselves. Because one thing about concrete, it doesn't work. It won't work with you. And when you hit concrete, you've hit a wall. And when I watch some of these guys do this, I'm saying, and not so much in in those two companies, but if we'd have done that back in the day, we wouldn't have made it a year or two in the business, because you can. Now, there was a lot of difference between working back then and working now. We worked. People said, "Oh, you guys were slow." No, we were smart because we didn't have trainers. If you got hurt, guess what? You didn't get paid. So to go out there and just do a bump, just to excite one crowd, I mean, he could have took your whole career away. But and I watch it now and saying, "My God, I don't know how these guys are doing it." Even today, because they take so many. To me, if they slow down, their longevity would be more. And it may not be like Booker T retiring at an early age. Booker T didn't retire at an early age. He probably had 30 years in the business working. And great worker, good interview, knew what he was doing. So, and I heard his school was very good too. So,
when was the first time you met Booker? Was it maybe early 90s when he was in the Indies, or was it TNA?
No, it was TNA. I met him there, and he did well. He was on commentary. So one day I'm listening to him commentary, and he's talking like a British guy. Like he had the British accent. And I went, "What the hell is he is?" Because just because I was on creative, I didn't know everything. And I went, "Wait a minute. We never talked about Booker T talking in a British accent." And then I asked, because Vince Russo was on creative too. I says, "Why is he talking in a British accent?" And Vince watched less of the TV than I did sometimes. He says, "He is." I said, "Yeah, why?" He says, "I don't know." Then I asked Jeff, I says, "Why is he talking in a British accent?" He said, "I don't know." So nobody knew why he was doing it. And it wasn't my job to confront him with it. But you know what I thought he was doing? I thought he was actually auditioning for another TV show. is what I thought. And it's, and it's funny, in TNA, when we would get those guys from WWE, and we'd ask them or tell them what we wanted them to do, they would question it. And then it took me a while to figure it out. But the guy, when we would give him the finish, whatever he was doing, whether he was going over, whether he was getting beat, DQ, whatever, we didn't know this at the time, and I figured it out later, or I thought I did. They were running it through two lenses. They was doing it, well, with this, not that will it hurt me in TNA, but will it hurt me in the eyes of Vince McMahon? Because if he was watching that, which he did, he watched the show, and if he saw them go down there and get beat, well, he don't want them anymore. And I tried to bring that up one time, and nobody, they said, no, no, they're not doing that. Because Dixie herself told me, she says, no, that is not true. I had a very long and deep conversation with whoever it was, and he assured me that his heart and is with TNA and is with us here. So, no, he's not doing that. And I said, okay. She was the boss, so that's what she believed. That's what she believed. I mean, you know, it's Dixie. I think she was okay. She was I'd say she's a, you know, I like her. She was entertaining to be around, but her wrestling knowledge was just zero, and she didn't know how wrestlers. See, our whole life, we've been doing a work. It's called a work. But she thought when they told them something, like if I went up to Dixie and told her something, which could have been a complete bullshit lie. But I'm saying, oh, you know, this happened and this happened. And, oh, she'd feel sorry for me. And then they would change something. A lot of talent in TNA would actually go and seek her out during the tapings and tell them that why their finish was wrong and why we should have do it this way. And she would come to the back sometimes and say, what are you doing with so-and-so? And we'd tell her, and she says, well, and then she'd give some reason why maybe we should give it thought that we change it. I don't think we ever did, but but when guys know they can work the owner and the owner has power over creative, you got a problem, a big problem.
We will do one more bit of news and then we'll get to the, I suppose the reason, maybe not the reason why we're doing the podcast, but the main subject of the podcast. And this last bit of news is Seth Rollins calling CM Punk a cancer. In an interview with Wrestling Inc., Seth Rollins had the following to say when asked about a potential WWE return of CM Punk. Billy Phil, stay away. Stay away, you cancer. Get away from me forever. I don't like Phil. I don't like Phil. He's a jerk. Did we just figure that out? Everybody in the room is like, did he say that? Yeah, he's a jerk. Come on, we figured it out over there. We knew it over here. I don't want him back. Go do something else. Bye-bye. See you later. So, fairly unambiguous, he's not a fan of CM Punk then. As far as CM Punk goes, you've booked a lot of wrestlers who may be termed difficult in one way or another. In your opinion, when you see CM Punk and everything you've read, is CM Punk's drawing power worth the headaches that come with it?
Nope. If he's going to give you headaches, does that make you money? Does that make anybody else buy a ticket or buy a pay-per-view or sell any more merchandise? Because if they're going to give you a headache, why would you even have them? It's like having a quarterback on a team. If I'm the coach and I call a play, well, I want that play run. But if he's going to call a timeout and come over and say, coach, I don't think we need to play. We need to run that play. I said, why? Well, blah, 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 blah. I said, I don't give a shit. Run the play. And don't call any more timeouts. We only got three. I mean, I won't. And if it, guess what? If it goes badly, it's on me. If you pick a play and it goes badly, it's on you, and I'm going to remember it. You cannot book yourself, and you cannot listen to talent in the dressing room a lot of times, because they see themselves, I talk about lenses, they see themselves with their own lens, which is always highly complimentary of them. But if you study the crowd or look at the gates or look at the ratings, they'll tell you how popular they are. Now, Phil at one point was over like a son of a gun in WWE, but he is, I think he caused more dissatisfaction backstage than I think he helped. Because we had a situation when I was in WWE one time, somebody had lost something and he called a locker room meeting. And I went, because I wasn't used to locker room meetings, really. You know, they said Undertaker used to call them, or the leader of the locker room or whatever. But we never had that back in the day. We didn't have a leader to call a meeting. Hell, it was only 14, 15 of us anyway in the smaller territories. So we could just drive down a road and have a meeting. But he called this meeting and he says, you know, somebody had lost a wallet or an earring in the ear or something, and nobody would own up to getting it. And he says that if I find out who got it, I'm going to beat the living hell out of him or something. I went, wait a minute, who told this guy? Who told this guy he was a tough guy anyway? I mean, these are big guys in a WWE dressing room. And what I thought had happened, the guy had misplaced it, which he did. But he thought somebody had stolen it. And I don't get it. Yeah, I'm going to kind of have to go with Rollins there, that he causes, I don't know if he's a cancer or not, but I won't go that far. But I will say he probably causes more disharmony than he causes togetherness. And that in itself creates a lot of problems.
It's just, I don't know if this will translate to you. It was like CM Punk, and this is before his UFC career. I mean, it would have been great if someone was like, I'm going to beat the hell out of everybody who's there, and then someone just brought up a little handbag and go, ooh, I'm so scared.
Wait a minute, here it is, I'm sorry. Oh, my God. But I never will forget that. Everybody was in there, and when he said that, they was going, people just looked at each other like, what the fuck is he talking about? A strange thing for him to say. And that's one reason I had a couple of meetings with Vince. I was trying to get in the day he quit, which was in, where did he quit?
Early 2014. I can find out.
Where was it that he quit? The city?
I'll pause one sec.
Where was it?
I'm re-recording now, Dutch. It was Cleveland, Ohio. Oh, no, I've just started then. So that was about 3 minutes of pausing for me to find out that information.
All right. Well, anyway, on the day that I was going to go see Vince, and I had this great idea. And I would go up to the door and I'd say, is Vince available? No, he's in a meeting. How long is he going to be in a meeting? Oh, we don't know. Whenever. And I think Laurinaitis was there. Then I went back 30 minutes later. Is Vince still busy? Yeah, he's still in the meeting. See me? Guess he was in a meeting with. Yeah, he was in there with Phil. The whole time, Phil, because he was mad, pissed off, that he wasn't going to be, I guess, he wasn't going to be the main event at WrestleMania. Or it was some issue he was having. And Vince knew that he had put all this time, all this TV time and effort into CM Punk. And now he's trying to get part of his investment to work with him. And I guess he must have been just impossible to work with. And I don't know if he walked out that day or if he walked out that day.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, that's why he's an asshole, really, because you know, when you walk out that day and they have, it's like if we had put a lot of effort into a guy like they did CM Punk, and he just walks out, now that causes everybody, and it just doesn't cause the office money, it costs the talent money, and creative has to work more. So I would have to say that, yeah, he's a, I'll have to agree with Mr. Seth, because and I don't think he'll ever go back to WWE anyway, since Vince is, you know, if Vince was there, I would say not no, but hell no. Now with the other people in charge, there's no way for him to go back, because, you know, you only got a, how old is CM Punk?
Probably early 40s. I'll check that as well while you're...
Okay, he's 40. He's way past his really drawing years. A wrestler will have drawing years, and very few of them have drawing years more than 5 years. Of course, you got the Stone Colds and the Icons, and you got the Rock, and you got Hogan, and maybe Kurt Angle to a degree, but now they're older. And you might bring them back for a big WrestleMania or a big card somewhere, but CM Punk, I don't think he fits in that group.
What's
but they had put they had put a lot of effort into him. So
he was 44, or he is 44.
He's past the time.
We are now going to get to sort of the main event, as it were. We're going to be looking back at the life and times of Lanny Poffo. He died February 2nd, 2023, at the age of 68. Very, very sudden as well. The news was broken by Jim Duggan on his Facebook page. He says, "With a very, very heavy heart, I've been asked to let everyone know about the passing of our friend and colleague Lanny Poffo, the genius, R.I.P. Lanny." I actually gave my thoughts on my own channel, and somehow that went great. 50,000 people watched what I got to say about it. Anyway, the point is that he was my first ever interview. And I really meant it when I said, if that had gone really wrong, I may have never done a second, let alone hundreds now, as it is. He exercised, you know, constantly. I think he was a teetotaler. He was on the Dr. Joel Fuhrman diet of mostly berries, onions, mushrooms, seeds, etc. He was incredibly health conscious. And the sad state of affairs is that sometimes just genetics, just you can't beat genetics sometimes. And, you know, a huge surprise, sad surprise for everybody.
What was the cause of his death?
We don't know yet. We don't know. No, I mean, I can speculate, but apparently it was very sudden. So maybe it was heart issue. But as I say, I don't want to speculate. I
wonder why they won't release that, or nobody said anything about that.
What are your first memories of Lanny? Because you did have, if not his first match, one of his first matches.
I was reading that the other day. His first match was held against, was against who, you say? What's this guy's name?
Oh, it's some scrub called Wayne Cowan. I don't think he ever made it
business. Oh, yeah. He'll never make it. he'll never make it. He need a... Well, I talked a little earlier about, or maybe in a podcast, about when I started, I was greener than grass. I didn't know anything. So imagine putting me and Lanny in the same ring together. We're both greener than grass, but yet they put us in there, and I didn't think it was a bad match, because I was probably beating the crap out of him. He was beating the crap out of me, so we just didn't know any different. But yeah, I did have his first match, and he did some kind of a gimmick. He would do cartwheels in the ring, and he was actually doing Adrian Street, not quite as, you know, forcefully as Adrian would do, but he was trying to do the effeminate male gimmick. I don't think if he realized that's what he was doing, or maybe he was just trying to do himself. I don't know. But, and he was a baby face and I was the bad guy. So I don't know how some of those guys felt cheering him, and he was doing this and posing in the corner and all. But
was it like an Argentina rocker kind of thing? You know, almost like a ballerina kind of thing.
And he was very agile. He did a lot of crazy stuff. But he was not a great worker, but a good one. And of course, at that time, basically what that was for me was a training session, really. I was getting paid to train, and he was too. And the only reason he was there was because of his dad, Angelo Poffo, which was a big name, I guess, even before my time. But he had gotten Randy into the business. And Randy, when I first met him, was doing what was he doing? Some kind of mask gimmick. He would throw this Spider-Man. He was doing the Spider-Man gimmick with the mask and all. And I was in Atlanta. So I remember when they came in, we lived in this place, this little apartment condo called the Falcon's Rest. And it was right next to the airport runway. My God. And it's in Atlanta. Believe me, those planes started coming in and leaving at 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, they'd blow you. Seriously, I could look out my window and see a plane. It would be like, I don't know, 600-800 feet away. And when they took off, oh, it was loud. And when they landed, it was loud. I eventually learned to sleep through that. But that's where we lived, and they live right down the hall from me. So I got to know Randy pretty well then, and Lanny at the same time. What was I going to say about Lanny? And we would actually work our matches out during the afternoon. He'd come down and said, "Hey man, I forgot. I'm doing my Savage impression." He had a distinctive voice, and he was actually a very intelligent kid. He really was, and he was just different. And if you take Randy and Lanny, if you saw them, you would never believe they were brothers. I mean, I always thought that the daddy was different, but apparently it wasn't. I never learned of it anyway, but they acted nothing like brothers at all. Randy was a tinderbox. I mean, you could set him a flame like that. It didn't take a lot either. He'd just go, "Oh, whoa," he's raising hell. Lanny, you couldn't actually throw a grenade at him and make him hot. He'd just say, "Well," he'd take it and throw it out. And just, he was so laid back. They were just completely different. And a lot of times when Randy would get in a beef, this is later on, when Randy would get in a beef with somebody in the wrestling business or whatever, Lanny was the peacemaker. He'd go over there and he'd say, "You know, let's do this and let's do this." And because I don't know, but they were totally different. But had his first match, and he went from there. You know who else I had this first match? We'll talk about this another time. Mm-hmm. Jake the Snake, they said. And I didn't know it was his first match. I read that.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, I'll put that in the next episode. We'll have to bring that up, and then we'll try and figure that one out. You told me that Lanny, when you first met him, he was sort of book smart, but had absolutely no common sense whatsoever. Like, he didn't know how to do anything in the real world.
Oh, nothing. He didn't even know how to put oil in his car. He didn't know how to change oil in his car. I mean, I grew up down south, and those are some of the things you'd learn early, because you're not going to be, I grew up dirt ass poor. So you didn't take your car in for an oil change. We didn't have $8 for an oil change. You went and bought your oil and you did it yourself. But he didn't know how to do that. He didn't even know how to check his oil level. He didn't know how to go in there and pull the stick out and look at it. He didn't know that. He didn't know anything. He would just, but he was book smart, but in life, he was just clueless, clueless as he could be. And a lot of things he didn't know. And I used to ride with him a little bit. And he would tell me, no, he didn't study this, or he was good at poetry. He wrote poetry later on. But he read those type of books. And I could talk to him about it. I didn't mind talking about it. But he was in common life, in everyday things. Let's say a door come off the hinge. He didn't know how to fix it. He didn't know anything. But it would seem, even though if you didn't know how to fix it, you could look at the problem and say, well, this looks like it goes here. And then you look down at the bottom and see how that was attached. I don't think he ever put that together. And so I'm wondering, did he ever get married?
I think he did, yeah. Yeah.
Because I saw a picture of Randy and Miss Elizabeth, and they didn't have any kids. And I think I saw Lanny and a woman, a lady, and there was a small girl there. But I knew Lanny, I knew Randy didn't have kids with Miss Elizabeth at all. He was only married one time anyway. No, he's married twice, I'm sorry. But he never had kids.
I think Lanny did have, I think he's got a daughter.
Yeah. Okay, now he was living. Oh, somebody called me the other day about this, said he was living in somewhere down in Latin America.
Ecuador.
And I heard it was Ecuador. And then I heard him do an interview. He said it's a long way from Quito or Ecuador. And I'm thinking, you know, I've really never known anyone from Quito or Quito, Ecuador. And somebody asked me, they said, why was he living there? You know why he was living there?
Yeah, I think I do, but you tell me.
Well, it was cheap. Because the Papos were probably the cheapest people that I've, not only in wrestling, they're the cheapest people I've ever known. Because Angelo, and when they were all together, Angelo had a, what kind of car did he have? But an expensive car. But anyway, he would pile them all in that car and they'd all ride. And they'd all split the gas. If the gas was $6.57, that would be divided by three. And they would pay $2.22 a piece or whatever it came out to. I mean, it was down to the penny, because Angelo, he invested in the stock market. And he told those kids, he said, take care of your pennies, take care of your nickels, and the dollars would take care of themselves. And both of them grew up with that mentality, especially Randy. Randy, he was, even when he was in the WWE and when Miss Elizabeth was with him and she was drawing, she was making money too, but they would rent the cheapest car that they could rent. You know, most guys look for a comfortable car. They don't worry about, you know, say it's $20 more a day or whatever it was back. He would rent like the cheapest car, the $8 a day car. That's what he'd rent. And he'd make the towns. Of course, they only had one room price they had to pay. They'd have to pay two rooms. They stayed in the same room, so they saved money there. And they went to, like, all-you-can-eat buffets a lot. But so he hated to spend money. The cheapest guy I've ever known. Because I made a trip with him a couple of times, and it got down to the penny. I forgot what we used to charge for trance. We called it trance, like if you rode with somebody. Say I rode with you to Savannah. And I forgot the price back in those days. But it was like you would charge by the mile. It was either 2 or 3 cents per mile. But it kept you from taking your car and wearing your car out. But I went with him sometime, came back, and it was like I owed him. I came up with that figure, $2.22, something like that, $2.17. I said, "Okay, here's $2." "No man, no man. I need my 17 cents." I said, and I thought he was ribbing. I went, "You're shitting me, right?" He said, "No, no, I'm not." And I said, "I'm the big spender." I gave him a quarter, and I told him keep the change, and he kept the quarter. So, and the reason he was living in Quito, Ecuador, is because I think you can. I read this the other day. You can go to some places in Latin America, and for $2,000 or $2,500 a month, you can live well. And I think, I don't know when that was printed. I think it would be more now, but I mean, you could have everything. I mean, a nice place to stay, and your electricity was somehow subsidized by the government, or it's not very much, and your cable's not very much. And I said, hell, I might move down there myself. But that's why he was down there. And he didn't have a woman. He didn't have a wife. So somebody told me, and I'm not going to say who, but they said he hired five housekeepers. And these housekeepers were all 19, 20-year-old Ecuadorian, good-looking females. So,
that's one thinking, for every day of the week.
Yeah, I said, Lanny, you did it right, I guess. But I hope he was happy, and I think he was. And I think he left the United States because his family is gone. His mom's gone. Angelo died years ago. I mean, so did Randy, died years ago. So, and I don't know if he had any cousins that he even cared about or whatever. And Angelo also served as a coach for them about the business and how it was. And so they had a good thing going. And that's why I'm going back to why he lived in Ecuador. The main reason was because it was economical on the checking account, because Lanny had to be loaded. He got what was left of his father's estate. And Randy, I think Randy left him a lot too. So I'm saying he may have been sitting down there with millions of dollars, no telling how much.
I believe that Lanny was teetotal, or at least he rarely hung out with the boys after the matches.
Never. Never.
So I suppose who were his like closest friends in the wrestling business when you knew him?
I don't know. I don't think he really had any close friends in the wrestling business. Lanny was, by and large, a loner. That kind of stayed to himself, was friendly to everybody. Hell, you couldn't get mad at him because he was too friendly. He'd say, "Hey, how you doing?" And it's like he was very friendly, and he gave nobody a reason to be mad at him for anything. But I don't think I know of one close friend that he had. Of course, we all know each other. But as far as hanging around, he didn't drink. He damn sure didn't do drugs, and he didn't smoke dope. So, and he lived a very healthy lifestyle, which stunned me when I heard that he had passed away. I went, from what? I mean, here's a guy that worked out. Basically, he did not so much with weights, but he would do squats and free exercises. And probably, I don't think he was a runner either, but he stayed in shape. He was probably never over 220, 210. And Landy's kind of tall too. He's probably maybe 6 foot tall, but he stayed in shape. So, and that's why I never could imagine what he died from. I'm still waiting for that answer.
Yes, I think we all are. I'll bring up this very quickly. I believe he was either the first or second, because Chavo Guerrero Sr. may have something to say about it, that he was the first person in North America to do a moonsault, and he said that he saw it and he just stole it from Tiger Mask because he was watching a Tiger Mask video. But there's something else I've got to mention, Dutch, and I'm sure you know what it's going to be. There's a long-standing rumour that Lanny had a special party trick. Is this something that he treated the boys to as far as viewing, or how did this rumour get started?
Well, it's not a rumour. Well, you're saying that he had an unusual talent of being able to somehow turn his body in such a way that he could somehow give himself a blowjob. Is that what you're trying to say?
Listen, you know, whatever you infer from what I'm saying, man.
That's a joke that he had, and he told me, he says, if he goes out with a girl and she won't do it, he would tell her, and he would do this in front of them. He said, that's okay. I can do it for myself. So one night she said no, and he started showing her his talent, and she said, well, you don't need me, and she got up and left. See, that has a way to backfire on you too, but yes, he could do that. I'm going to have to say that, and he demonstrated it for me since we lived in the same place, and he showed me. I said, well, that's unique, I guess. Oh, at times Lanny had no filter. So it was one of those crazy nights where I was smoking dope in Atlanta, and he was down there. We got to talking about something outside, and of course my wife was there, and also he told her to leave, and then he demonstrated it. Yeah.
Well, somehow that makes it less weird. It's just two dudes.
Well, it is weird, but hey, I don't give a crap. You know, he was really proud of that technique. Really proud of it. Because, which goes to show you, he had a pretty big slung. So.
And he was a gymnast, limber.
And he was. Yep. He was a crazy guy.
If podcasting had like the equivalent of an Emmy, we should submit that last 3 minutes to it and see and see if we get through. I thought we'd be struggling still on the news. We've actually got a time for a couple of questions, a couple more questions on Lanny and the Poffos and all that kind of thing. I didn't realize this. Angelo and the Poffos sued the NWA for having a monopoly on the business. And then this is because he had International Championship Wrestling, an outlaw promotion. And when did that form? About 78. And that was a...
late 78.
Yeah, late 78. Lanny Poffo joins.
Because we were both working in Tennessee. And I left to go to Puerto Rico at the maybe October 78. And I went to Puerto Rico. And no, I left at the end of the year to go to Puerto Rico. And Lanny left about October to go up north. Why they wanted to go up in the winter, I don't know. But they went up there and they were in Newfoundland or the
Grand Prix, the Dupree.
Yeah, it was up north. And they bought into that. And I'm sorry. They started just another one. Lexington, Kentucky.
Yes,
that's
yes,
where
yes.
They started it.
Yeah, sorry, I was getting confused. Lanny Poffo didn't actually make it in the first few months. He was in Portland and Grand Prix. I believe he turned up in ICW in 1989 in the summer. In the formation
1980.
Sorry, 1979, apologies. So Angelo steals some talent from Indianapolis, Dick the Bruiser, and also the Jarretts. What talent did they steal? Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't know what they stole, really. I don't. I don't remember that. I remember he was there. And Randy called me, wanted me to come.
Why didn't you?
Well, it was a new company. I didn't want to take a chance with a new company. And it was back in those days, you had to be kind of leery if you worked for somebody like that, because then you could get blackballed yourself. They wouldn't use you because they couldn't trust you. They said. And he never would discuss money. I mean, I can't go up there on a maybe. So I didn't go. But I don't know what other talent they really stole that mattered that much.
Yeah, I know, like, they had Bob Roop there. I think Rick Rogers wrestled there at one point. I'll give you this then. So Randy Savage especially would be challenging the Memphis guys to a fight, you know, Lawler, but I think, Dundee and everything.
Now I'm confused. Bob Roop and who else did you say?
Rip Rogers, was he not in ICW at one point?
Yeah, he was there. He was Randy's friend. Yeah.
Paul Christie, I think, was in ICW.
Yeah, they were, and Rip was in, he was in Memphis, but later than that. I mean, and Randy actually came back and worked Memphis later.
I'm going to have to look on that one. I may be talking out of school there with Rip Rogers. Let's talk about the genuine animosity between the Poffos and the Jarretts. When did that kick off, and how did that sort of come to the fore, as far as, like, were they trying to mess each other around on dates or threaten to fight each other? Because I believe at one point wrestlers started carrying guns.
That was them, though. Did I carry a gun? Nah. If they'd run up on me, I said, guys, what are y'all doing? You know, why would you fight somebody when you had nothing to do with it? I mean, and Randy, I don't think would have fought me anyway, because he knew me from Atlanta and we kind of broke in together. I mean, there was a kind of mutual respect there. It was the guys that Randy didn't know that he disliked. One of the guys he disliked was Bill Dundee. And they had a fight in Nashville. And what Randy was doing in Nashville from Lexington, Kentucky, I have no idea. It's like 230 miles away. But they were, I guess they were at the gym working out. And I think word had gotten back that Bill had said something about them. And so they confronted Bill in the parking lot. And I think they punched him or did a couple of things. And Bill had the gun and he pulled a gun out and they took off. That's what I heard. But I don't know where the animosity between the Poffos and the Jarretts started. It was more they didn't like Lawler and they didn't like Dundee more than Jerry Jarrett.
What was it with Lawler then?
Say what now?
Why did the Poffos not like Lawler? Was it just because he was the big star and they wanted to make a splash?
Well,
the scene,
they challenged him on their TV and Dundee on their TV, and they kept making an angle that it wasn't answered. Of course it's not going to be answered, because no deal had been cut or anything. And but I'm thinking, why would you challenge somebody that you know there's probably no chance of them showing up? You're just talking about somebody that's never going to be there. Now, maybe if they'd shown up, you'd have drawn a house, but they never did show up. Maybe later on. But they needed them like in the early days of their new territory they had started. They needed them then. So it was, and I would have thought Angelo would have known that, but apparently he didn't.
With ICW, was the problem that it just never drew that well because just never had the talent? Is it as simple as that?
ICW?
Yeah.
You're talking about
the Poffo.
They didn't have the towns. Listen, Memphis, the Memphis territory, they had Memphis. Of course, it's not such a big town then, but it is now. Memphis and Nashville, Louisville, Evansville were fairly sized towns. The only town that the Poffos had, the biggest town, was Lexington, which wasn't as big as Evansville. That was their main town. Then they would run those little out-of-the-way Kentucky, back-in-the-hills, holler towns that maybe have a 2,000 population, Of course, you know, you can't draw unless there's people to draw from. Not everybody's a wrestling fan. So they didn't really have, and that was one of the drawbacks of Smoky Mountain Wrestling too, is because they didn't have the towns. They didn't have the population to draw from. That was, I think their product was pretty decent for the time, but they didn't have the population to draw from.
I remember the footage, like the footage that you see now. I don't know if it's just because it's bad VHS or something, and the quality of the cameras was so bad, even compared to Memphis at the time. So, I mean, just from a visual production standpoint, the product quality was not there as compared to Memphis.
Well, they did it. They probably did it in Lexington. And, of course, Lexington is not going to have the TV quality that an Atlanta would have, or a Memphis would have, or even a Nashville would have. They had the nice cameras. This station was a out-of-the-way station, and the budget wasn't that strong. So they had two cameras, right?
Yeah, I think so. It was very basic.
Well, that's what they had.
When do you remember... In fact, do you remember the entire process of the Poffos, Randy, Angelo, Lanny coming over to Jarrett and Lawler and everyone saying, listen, actually, can we... I know we've said these horrible things about you for 5 years, but can we work together?
No, I think that was... I think Jerry Jarrett watched their show, and he was a fan of Randy's. And he said, well, this guy can draw us some money here. So he, as a good businessman would do, he pitched an idea to them between Lanny's self-palating himself. He pitched an idea, hey, let's work together. And they drew a couple of big houses in Lexington. Lexington was a tremendous wrestling town because, excuse me, we wrestled in Lexington at the Rupp Arena. Rupp Arena is a big basketball arena, and the University of Kentucky has a massive arena. You can see it 20, it's as big as Madison Square Garden. But they built it there in an out-of-the-way college town because it was such a big sport. Back in the days, they were like perennial national champions every year when they had a coach named Rupp. His name was Adolph Rupp, which is what the arena was named after. So, but when we ran it, we'd probably draw 10,000 people. Because they had a big curtain in the middle where they could curtain it off. And we just used half the arena, but it was full. People were right on top of you. And they were a loud crowd. And I think that was the main reason that Lanny came over. I think they worked some kind of a deal on splitting the house or whatever they did. But that's how they got Randy to Memphis. And he drew against Lawler, and of course all the fight between Dundee and Dundee was there. I mean, they just, it's like one of those things that happened, but us let it go, and for the sake of business, they let it go.
Did you wrestle? Because I know you wrestled Randy quite a few times in the Memphis mid '80s run. Did you wrestle Lanny at all as well?
No, we were all. Randy was a heel. Lanny was a babyface. I was a babyface. So I never wrestled Lanny. Where I met Randy, basically, was right before I went to Puerto Rico. I was working in Nashville. And I remember when we started, the territory was terrible. We'd go to Nashville, which had a population back in those days of maybe 600,000. Maybe it's a million now. 600,000. And we'd go out there and there'd be 200 people there. 200 people. It's like, and it wasn't even a big building and it looked empty. So finally I was a heel there, and Randy came to me one night and said, hey man, he said, we're busting our balls for nothing. Why don't we do this? He gave me this idea. He said, why don't we work an angle, me and you, and you turn babyface, I'll be the heel. And we did that angle, and 3 weeks later, we sold out Nashville. And we started drawing around the territory. That was Nick Gulas' last big hurrah. Because when I left and Randy left, that was the guts of your TV. So there was nothing to go see. So, and Nick, I think, closed up about 6 to 8 months later. And I say closed up, I think Jerry Jarrett, they worked some deal there where Jerry Jarrett bought him out.
I'm just Googling George Gulas there. I have a feeling that they limped on for a while. George Gulas was still wrestling in 1980 with Bobby Eaton. That must have been there last year, surely. 1980.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah. I'm going to run through some of Lanny's later career highlights. You jump in whenever you want to. Here's some mm-hmm. career highlights of Randy and Lanny depart from to the WWF in 1985. And apparently this was because possibly Jimmy Hart, who'd already just jumped to the WWF from Memphis, recommended them, as well as yes. Howard Finkel, who used to watch all the tapes, and they both went to McMahon and said, get Randy, and then Lanny goes yep. with him at Randy's behest. Lanny Poffo becomes the poet laureate of the WWF. He reads a brand new poem every night, and then he throws frisbees into the crowd, but essentially he is a preliminary wrestler. Say that. In March 1989, he turns heel and eventually becomes the cap and gown bedecked genius Lanny Poffo, a somewhat effeminate and unusually flexible bad guy, as we've discussed earlier, who was smarter than everybody else. He defeats Hulk Hogan via countout at Saturday night's main event, at the time when Hulk Hogan never lost, even by DQ or countout on television especially, and he formed a team with Mr. Perfect. He feuds with Jim Neidhart after that, then he gets his hair cut by Brutus Beefcake at WrestleMania 6, where supposedly nobody told Lanny he was getting his hair cut. They told Brutus, hey dude, you need to cut his hair at the end of it, or the kind of thing, but no one smartened up Lanny. Randy Savage was furious after the fact. Lanny then manages Bo and Blake Beverly, then he disappears from WWF TV. 1995, this is the most interesting story, and you said that you know that the Poffos like to save their money. In 1995, Randy purchased the rights to Gorgeous George name from the Wagner family, and then a newly bleach blonde Lanny was meant to debut in WCW in 1995, and then he just doesn't. His character's held off, and then he never makes an appearance on TV. He either never wrestled or wrestled once in a dark match, and he made $150,000 a year for 5 years to sit at home.
In WWC. In
WCW. WCW.
Yeah. That was a common known fact that Lanny signed a contract and never went. And I went, how in the... But, hey, it was their deal, so if Lanny can do that, more power to him. You know who else made money down there and never appeared for a long, long time?
Tell me.
Iron Sheik. They let his contract roll over and then didn't book him. And I know he stayed like a year or two, and whatever he was making, he never went. They just sent him a check every 2 weeks, and you would go, oh, Bubba, my checker coming. Let's go to the bank. And he never went out on the road. I'll tell you another, we need to talk about this. I went out on a trip one time, but these trips were like, I went 64 days one time in WCW and didn't go home. Because when they put you out on the road, it was 7 days. And if you finished up in, say, Cleveland, Ohio, you'd go back to the airport the next day, fly right back to Atlanta for 2 days. Then you'd fly back out Wednesday and go somewhere else. This went on for 8 weeks. And finally, I said, guys, I got to go home. My God. I was making a little money, but damn, that's wore me out. But I went on a trip with Psycho Sid and the Iron Sheik. It was like a 30-day deal. After the 30 days, I had to kind of get out of that. They were like, Sheik drove me nuts. They drove me crazy. And I'll tell a story about at 3 o'clock in the morning going out to a bar because the Sheik didn't like his room. I'll tell that story later on.
Just to add something to the Iron Sheik contract thing, what I believe happened was I'd have been, let's say, 89. I think George Scott was booking at the time. And he was stuck in the time warp of 20 years past. And he thought, well, the Iron Sheik's still got it going. And anyway, he hires him and he's so awful. He makes maybe a few TV appearances and wrestles a few matches. And then they just keep him off TV. And then it was so long since he'd been on TV that the contract rolled over and to a second year. And he was probably making well into six figures. And then they sort of thought, God, we're paying him for a second year now. We best bring him back onto TV. And he was so bad that they just told him to go back home again. So he did almost nothing for 2 years and got paid.
Well, the reason his contract rolled over, they forgot it. They just completely missed it. And it says, you know, if you're not, I guess, in the contract, that if you're not, it's automatic second year unless they stop it, and they didn't stop it. I don't know how long, but I do know it was a year or two that he got a check and never showed up.
Amazing stuff. I'm going to ask you one more question. We will shut the podcast down afterwards. In 2003, Macho Man Randy Savage released a rap album called Be a Man. Randy had asked Lanny to contribute lyrics to a diss track aimed at Hulk Hogan. And Lanny refused, as Hogan had never done anything to him and, in fact, basically gave him his greatest run in his wrestling career, and he made the most money with Hogan. So he just said he won't do it, and then he ends up contributing lyrics to a Mr. Perfect album instead. A few days ago, Hogan tweeted that Lanny was the full-time referee between Randy and I. And you alluded to that before. What was it
between, I believe that.
Yeah, what was it between Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage?
Well, Randy didn't like him. I mean, I could talk about Randy Savage, but I think one of the things was some of that stuff you saw on TV where he accused Hogan of having eyes for Elizabeth had a little bit of truth to it in Randy's head. I don't think Hogan ever looked at her like he would like to take her away from Randy or do something with her away from Randy. But Randy was very, very protective of that woman. When if he was in a building, he would put her in a room, just her and him. And he would go out and visit around. She never came out of that room. And I never went in there. I don't think anybody went in there because he was very, I mean, it was almost, it was weird, eerie, that he protected her so much. But he was, I mean, when he protected her, I mean, he was watching out for her all the time, because I think he thought all the other guys had eyes for her. But he would put her in a room, and she'd stay in that room till time to go to the ring. He'd take her to the ring, and they'd do whatever, and they'd come back and go back to the room. Unless she was involved in something, I don't think she even saw the opponent before the match. She just stood out of the ring. And what was your question? I may have missed the whole question.
It was,
here.
Why did Randy and Hogan, they worked together for years on and off. Why did they just hate each other, or Randy hated Hogan?
Oh, Randy had a knack of hating people. I mean, he could just get mad. That's why I said there was so much difference between Lanny and Randy. See, I think Randy had a little bit of he was psycho, basically. Good guy, but he was kind of a psycho, and he'd be driving down the road. I used to ride with him, and I would look at him sometimes, and he'd be driving like this, like, oh, God, oh, yeah. And he'd look over at me, and I'd go, oh, he scared me sometimes. I said, what the hell are you thinking? Oh, nothing, man, nothing. But he was. He was thinking how to get even with somebody, some way, somehow. Somebody had wronged him in his head, and it had to be corrected. And he probably didn't correct a lot of them, but he thought about it. So somehow... And it could have been something Hogan said, like he's the star. But in Randy's head, he was the star. So when you got them together, I think they made peace. toward the end, I think I heard. They were both in Florida. And, you know, we deal with deaths all the time in the wrestling business. But you know these guys, you work with them for years, and you've known them for years. And even though, Randy, I never called Randy when he left, you know. I mean, unless I was working a place with him, I never talked to him, never called him up. We weren't that type of friends, but I knew him, respected him. And when I heard he'd been killed in that automobile crash, it was, and I don't really get upset when, you know, wrestlers pass away, but that kind of bothered me. It was the only one, but he came a long way from nothing. He broke in. He weighed about 160 pounds. So what a battle it was for Randy Savage to get to where he got to. Because he fought. He fought for it. He believed in himself. He worked out. He got bigger. Came up. And I used to say it was Randy Poffo in the beginning. Then it went to Randy Savage. Then he morphed into the Macho Man. And when Randy got up in the morning, after he became the Macho Man, he was a Macho Man 24 hours a day. He never really got out of that character around people. He probably did around Miss Elizabeth or his second wife that was his high school sweetheart, I heard. But he was on the Macho Man bandwagon 24 hours a day. Because, you know, it's like when he went into a hotel lobby, he was still the Macho Man. Because somebody would recognize him, he would sign an autograph. But for him to be somebody else, and that would like disappoint the fans. So he just stayed in character. And maybe he wanted to stay in character, but he was the one guy who stayed in character all the time. Handsome Jimmy Valle didn't do that. When you see Handsome Jimmy Valle go to the ring, hey, daddy, and he, you know, he was up. He was high energy. And then he'd come back to the dressing room. Hell, you'd think he'd he took a bunch of downers and he'd be like this. And you say, Jimmy, you okay? Yeah, brother. Yeah, brother. You'd have to strain to hear what he was saying. So a big difference between those two.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to leave it there then. So I'll do a few plugs again. We've got books in the description. We've got a new t-shirt in the description to buy them. And I think that's pretty much it. We will catch you again next week. And Dutch, the people.
It's another story I got to tell next week about it. We the people.